This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba Through the Hour, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Want to talk with Zorba? Here's the number to call, 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, always some research to talk about. Interesting this time around?
Yes, we're going to talk about loneliness and the risk of Alzheimer's disease. Do social relationships help predict or prevent Alzheimer's disease?
Uh-huh.
And what about post-traumatic stress disorder? What about memory erasure? In other words, can you actually forget memories? Is that good for you or bad for you? Where's the controversy ethically about taking care of PTSD?
Oh, I saw a piece on this on TV. This is going to be about propranolol.
That's right. That's right. The issue of that. And we've got a wonderful recipe, Magic Mexican Pozole.
Coming up from Jacksonville, Florida, listener Shana David, who will be with us on the phone. So lots of reasons to stay listening. Oh, and our medical myth buster coming up as well. 800-462-7413. Again, that toll-free number. Zorba, a listener with us now in Greenfield, Missouri. Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, sure. Thanks for calling. What's up?
I'm calling actually for some follow-up advice from Zorba. We've never spoken or I've never called, but several years ago in your discussion on children with attention deficit disorder, my husband and I felt like you had secretly moved in with us and you were describing our daughter.
Oh.
Secretly moved in with you, huh?
Yes. You knew her too well. We talked to her teacher at that time and went to her pediatrician, and she was prescribed Concerta, and we felt like it was a miracle drug. It changed her life, our life as a family. She is not hyperactive, but it unlocked her. She became the successful student that we knew she could be.
Excellent. How old was she at the time?
She was 10 and a half, 11. She was in fifth grade.
Okay, and that was a few years ago.
Right. She's 14 now.
Okay.
What happened gradually but then culminated was that her fingers and her toes were changing color. Gradually it was one toe turned red, and then over months another toe, and ultimately all of her toes were purple.
Hmm.
Of course, we went to various doctors, and a rheumatologist had tentatively decided it was Raynaud's, but he really wasn't comfortable even with that diagnosis. So he, on a hunch, suggested we go Concerta-free for 4 weeks, which was to the chagrin of my daughter, but we did it.
Mm-hmm.
And within a week's time of that trial, it was obvious the Concerta was causing these physical problems. So we switched to Adderall, the same thing. We only recently switched to Strattera, and it too causes the same symptoms. So here we are.
Right. How's she doing in school now?
She is a great success in school. She's on the honor roll.
So even off the medication, she's doing all right?
Well, I guess I should say that we are. She's still taking just 5 milligrams of Adderall right now, just to get us through.
But you know, I have some advice for this.
Okay. That's why I called.
First of all, you are not doing her any permanent harm from this. This is a side effect from the drug. Just like some people have to take antihistamines that are sedating because they have hives. A drug called Benadryl makes them tired because they have hives. They have to take it maybe every day and they're a little groggy in the morning. That's a side effect of the Benadryl. There's nothing permanent. Stop the Benadryl, the grogginess stops. The same is true of Adderall, Ritalin, which is another type of drug like Concerta. It's exactly the same drug in a different form, and Strattera, you'll be doing yourself no harm. I would try lower doses to see how that works. I would try a pill that is not a 24-hour pill to see if that matters. In other words, Concerta is a 24-hour pill. I would go to the immediate-release methylphenidate, which is the immediately-release Ritalin, and then give it to her in the morning, give it to her at noon, and then she stops in the evening, and therefore she'll be drug-free out of her system at nighttime, because when you use the long-acting one, it stays in the body 24 hours. There's a convenience to that. But in her case, it would be better to go to the short acting. And then, as I said, I would look at the dosing and try it. But I wouldn't give it up because basically she's doing really well in school. This drug works for her. See if you can try to mitigate the side effects. No permanent problem here. Good luck with your daughter. Sounds like she's a great student now.
Great. Thanks a lot.
A
sure.
Pleasure.
We appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Here's our toll-free number again, 800-462-7413. Let's talk about Alzheimer's, Zorba. You mentioned research on Alzheimer's and loneliness.
Right. And my mom died of Alzheimer's back in 1981 when nobody discussed the A word. You know, it just wasn't discussed with that in dementia. And this was a particular project looking at Alzheimer's disease. What are the risk factors for Alzheimer's disease? And it comes out of Chicago. It's a long-term project from Rush Medical College, and it's called the Memory and Aging Project. And they started with about 800 people. The average age was 81. So these are old folks. They're at about a 50% risk of developing Alzheimer's over the next year. They were all free of dementia at the start of the study. And once again, Alzheimer's really can only be diagnosed at autopsy. Dementia, which is memory loss and dysfunction, is really a broad term. And that includes Alzheimer's and other little strokes and other things that are important. Okay. They had a score of 1 to 5. Who's lonely? Who isn't lonely? 5 is the worst. On the whole, the participants' average was about 2.3. So these were participants who, you know, they were a little bit lonely and some were a lot, were very
lonely. A variety of loneliness, yeah.
You bet. Followed him for 4 years. Remember, no one had Alzheimer's disease at the beginning, and they looked to see who basically was going to develop Alzheimer's and who did not. And they found that basically the people who were more likely to develop Alzheimer's, they roughly doubled the amount if they had a loneliness score that was higher. In other words, if they were more lonely, if they had a high loneliness score, they were twice as likely to develop Alzheimer's disease as if they had a low loneliness score.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's another side of this, though. You can interpret this completely differently, and you can say, well, if you develop Alzheimer's disease, you're not as interactive, and therefore you're more likely to be lonely.
Now, maybe we don't know cause and effect for
this. Except at the beginning of the study, nobody had Alzheimer's. In other words, they were tested.
Yeah.
So you could argue and say, well, wait a minute, you've got Alzheimer's, therefore you're withdrawing and you're not talking to people. No, at the beginning of the study, nobody had it. They were tested for Alzheimer's, they were tested for dementia, and they had none of it.
Yeah.
So loneliness might be a marker somewhere. We don't really know where the cause and effect is, but like you say, like a muscle, promoting social interactions may promote neurological synaptic function in the brain.
Alzheimer's is such a big deal. I read just the other day in the paper from, I think, the Alzheimer's Association or Society, whatever it is, that at age 65, 1 in 8
that's a little high to me.
Have Alzheimer's, and at age 85, half of the people, 85 and older,
80,
half of the people have 80, Alzheimer's?
80, 85 is pretty high. I don't know if it's 1 in 8. Now, 1 in 8 may have some sort of memory dysfunction, meaning that you don't remember things the way that you used to, but you can still function. I mean, it depends on where you are on this sort of dysfunctional scale, like everything else. You can be totally dysfunctional or say, look, I don't remember things. I'm using Post-it notes.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, some people don't need Post-it notes. It doesn't really matter. But it's a big risk.
Alzheimer's is increasing, and as you've mentioned on the program, before, it's mainly because we aren't getting heart attacks as much.
Correct.
We aren't getting cancer as
much. Living longer.
We're living longer.
We're living longer.
And because of that, more of us are getting Alzheimer's.
That's exactly it. And the real issue is, how do you keep from getting it? What's your shield? And it appears that social interactions may be an important shield against Alzheimer's disease, just like crossword puzzles have been proven with the Nunn study and other ways of using your brain. Use it or lose it.
800-462-7413. Use it if you want to talk to Zorba. And a listener with us now in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
I guess I can start and say that about 3 years ago, I took a desk job and realized now, 3 years later, that that's doing absolutely nothing for my health. So I have started to work out a little bit. But I guess my problem and the question I have involves targeted weight loss. I seem to be losing weight, and that's all well and good, but not where I want to.
Hmm. What were you doing before you took the desk job, just out of curiosity?
I was in college, so I mean, I was a little more active, you know, as a college student and whatever.
And then you got into the workplace, and you're in a cubicle somewhere, and blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
And you want to lose weight where?
And your name is Dilbert. Right? And your name is Dilbert.
Where do you want to lose? Where do you want to lose the weight?
The midsection is primarily where I'm trying really hard to. Mm-hmm. But
well, Zorba's going to fix this for you right now.
Yeah, right. Exactly. All you can do is buy my new special Zorba belt, and you wear it, and there'll be no problem. Just send $9.95 to Zorba Master, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 52706, and make sure you enclose a self-addressed stamped envelope. And we guarantee 25 pounds off your belly or double your money back.
Not all results are as advertised. Seriously,
God, don't you wish it? Well, the problem is there is no such thing as targeted weight loss. Your storage place for your excess calories happens to be in your belly, which, by the way, is a risk factor for heart disease. Women store their fat in their butt, and it turns out that may be one of the reasons that women do not have the same heart attack rates as men, even though they have a heart attack rates are lesser, and it's thought that where the fat is stored may actually make a difference. Now, what is your height? What's your weight?
I'm about 6 foot. I weigh right now probably 175 to 180.
Okay, so you're not a heavy guy. What'd you weigh when you entered college? Do you know?
Probably towards the end of college, mm-hmm. I was 190, and then shot up to about 200 before I started working out again.
So you've really started to lose weight. Now, was your belly flatter in college? Was that the issue?
Not in college, like before college, high school years. Like I used to be a lot more active, and so I didn't have a lot of excess
weight
on me.
What was your weight in high school?
I was probably down to 170, 165.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was a decently active person, so I didn't have a lot of fat on me.
See, so part of the issue is not just fat. The other part of the issue is really how toned are your abs. That's really the other part of the issue. Now, some people have thicker abdominal muscles, and they're the ones that pose in Men's Health and other magazines. And part of that is really a genetic issue. So ultimately, it's fat, it's the toning of the muscles in the belly, and it's calories in. So my recommendation is, you know, it sounds like you've lost a significant amount of weight from your top 200 to 175. Way to go.
Yeah, I've been running mostly, and that's what's been really doing it for me.
The next 5 pounds may be your answer. You're not far away from your goal body weight if you're in that 170s at 6 feet. So abdominal muscle exercises, reduction of weight a little bit, keep it up, and congrats.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Thanks. Let's see, diet and exercise. We hadn't heard that before on the program.
Well, it's tough. You know, it's tough because what we all want is, of course, is the magic bullet. But in his case, exercising the abs, 6 feet, 175, mm-hmm. abdominal exercises won't necessarily reduce the fat, but they will increase the tone of the muscle, and that'll make a difference.
Our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. And a Hartford, Wisconsin caller with us now. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, I have a rather strange problem.
Mm-hmm.
I'm losing some sleep over it,
mm-hmm.
and it seems like it's been happening for about 6 months or so,
mm-hmm.
and it seems like my tongue has gotten thicker and larger.
Your tongue is getting...
Uh-huh. Are you on medicines?
Just hydrochlorothiazide.
Hydrochlorothiazide for blood pressure. Anything else? Are you on something called an ACE inhibitor?
No. No, mm-hmm. No, that's the only thing I'm on.
Yeah, I'd stop the hydrochlorothiazide and see if that's the factor. I'd talk to your doctor.
Okay.
That's what
okay.
I would do. It might be tongue swelling can be from a bunch of things, but if people are on drugs, the first thing I question is the drug.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Is to see if that's if
what
that's
are the
issue.
Other things?
Well, there are other drugs that can do it. Allergic responses can do it. Those are kind of the things that are there. Now, is your tongue thicker in the morning, or is it just thicker? Has there been a change in speech or swallowing at all?
Well, I'm more aware of my tongue during the day, mm-hmm. and I notice my swallowing.
Yeah.
Swallowing.
Have you been choking on food at all? Spitting
no.
up food or
no,
having trouble
no
with liquids?
No.
Have people noticed if they said, hey, your voice changed a bit?
No, they haven't commented on that.
Because a tongue change will make a difference. When you wake up in the morning, is it worse than in the evening?
Well, I wake up during the night, and it's, like, stuck to the top of my mouth.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so I keep a water bottle handy and
drink some
water.
I've got another recommendation with that. How's your nose? You breathing out through your nose at night, or is your mouth open at night?
No, my mouth can't be open at night because it's full of my tongue.
It's full of your tongue. It's an interesting vision. You know, just the tongue is just coming out of the mouth.
Right.
Vaporizer, you have one?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You have it in the room?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Moist air, ultrasonic, what kind?
It's just one of the hot, moist ones.
Okay. I would also try an ultrasonic vaporizer. Moisturize the air in the room. You might even do that even before you stop the hydrochlorothiazide. You might be opening up your mouth when you're sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And part of this might be a drying of your tongue.
Okay.
Because you notice in the middle of the night, you know, you got to drink some water because your tongue is thicker. And I would try using an ultrasonic one. It shakes the water. The water vapor is actually smaller and able to penetrate better. And I would put it near the bed.
Uh-huh.
In other words, I wouldn't put it somewhere else in the room. If it's wintertime, the windows should steam up, but you want to make that room kind of moist and see what that does, because that might be the issue. I mentioned the nose because if you're not breathing out of your nose and you open up your mouth, your tongue will feel bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how much of this is real or feeling, because
uh-huh.
if your tongue is really bigger, you start to choke on food and you don't talk right. You talk funny. So part of this, what you have me is minimal. So I think I'd moisturize the room first, stop the drugs second, but talk to your doctor before you stop a blood pressure pill. Because you'll need to be on another.
All right. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the call. Zorba, let's go to the Zorba Pastor on your health inbox and see if we can help out Kathy in Knoxville, Tennessee. Kathy is caught in a bit of a pickle. She writes, "My Viactive calcium chews have corn syrup and high fructose corn syrup as the first two ingredients. There are about 20 calories per chew. Would this be reason enough to change?"
You mean because you're getting 20 extra calories? Well, the reason that these chews are so
popular is they
taste good.
Should she get some sort of lower?
No, I think it's a choice.
Calorie,
where do you want to get your 20 calories? If you want to get your calcium in a candy chew, which is an okay way to get it, then you're having a piece of candy for 20. And 20 calories is not much. Remember, the standard of the industry when it comes to candy calories is a Snickers.
Which is
a Snickers,
400,
no, 210 calories,
oh, 210.
400 in the king size bar. The king bar is 400.
I remembered you.
The regular bar is 210, you know, the jumbo bar. But it's 210 calories, so you're having a tenth of a Snickers.
Yeah.
That's what you're having. You decide. Tenth of a Snickers or an Oreo is 80 calories. She's having a quarter of an Oreo or a tenth of a Snicker when she gets her calcium chews. See, I occasionally will take calcium if my stomach is distressed, and I hate calcium tablets. They taste chalky and they don't taste good.
Yeah.
So I kind of like these calcium chews, and I don't mind a bit of candy. I kind of think candy's good for you in moderation. Makes you feel good, perks you up, makes you feel a little better, you know, changes your mood. You know, chocolate is one of the important ingredients of life, don't you think?
Zorba Pastor says candy is good for you.
Well, you eat candy every day. Look at you. You're a happy person.
Compared to who?
Well, compared to Garfield. Let's compare you to Garfield. That's right.
We like hearing from you. Just send your comments, tips, and questions to
Zorba@WBR.org.
We have a recipe coming up from a listener in Jacksonville, Florida. Shayna David will be with us. Magic Mexican Pozole. That's coming up along with more of your calls. We have our medical myth buster. Stick around here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Question for Zorba. The number is 800-462-7413. But Zorba, here it is, recipe time before we get to the phones. Well, we do get to the phone because we have a listener, recipe supplier on the phone from Jacksonville, Florida. Shayna David, hi.
Hi there.
Good to have you here to tell us all about Magic Mexican Pozole. How'd you come up with this one?
The full title is actually Magic Mexican Pozole a la Can Opener. I came up with it. You'll see why when you start reading it. It's I came up with it because I really like homemade soups, and I like cooking a lot, but one night I was not in the mood to chop anything, so I wanted a recipe that was minimal chopping, maximum can opening, but still very flavorful.
Obviously, you like Mexican food.
I love Mexican food.
I don't know pozole. What is pozole?
I didn't know it before I made it. It's a pork and hominy soup. This one has no pork, so it's kind of a vegetarian pozole.
Okay, so this is the soup we're going to be talking about then.
That's right.
And you eat it with what? Anything else?
I think it's a really good accompaniment to tostadas or tacos or anything else that you need a side dish with and you don't want to eat a lot of. If you don't want to eat 6 or 7 tacos, if you really love them, if you fill up with the soup, you won't eat so many tacos.
Okay, we'll go through the ingredients.
You know, that's very interesting. Maybe that's why soup, you know, one of the things about soup is that it often began a meal. And if you look at the main meal, it was often, if there was soup, it's not as if you had this enormous plate of food. I mean, it traditionally was sort of...
Well, we have it in front of us here, Shayna. Zorba will go through the ingredients. Feel free to jump in whenever you want.
This looks absolutely wonderful, by the way. So it could be Magic Mexican Pozole Can Opener
Soup. A la can opener.
I got it. Okay, 2 cups of veggie broth.
Couple of cups of
and
vegetable
use
broth.
Canned vegetable broth. That's what you use. Is that right?
Mine comes in a box, but
comes in a box. Okay, so it's a can in a box. So it's a boxed vegetable broth. 1 10-ounce can. Now, what is this? Rotel tomatoes with jalapeno and lime. Where do you get those?
I get those here at the Jacksonville Publix. Everything in this recipe is available at my local grocery store, so it can't be too hard to find.
So these are lime and jalapeno spiced tomatoes. That's really
correct.
What they are.
Literally chopped up tomatoes with chopped up jalapenos and squeezed lime in it.
Right. And you can, if you go to most grocery stores, if you look down the aisle, the regular tomato aisle, you'll find it. If you look in the Hispanic and Mexican section, you'll probably find it there also. One of the things I always tell people when they move to a new city, go and explore your grocery store. There'll be things in it you don't even realize are there that you may be able to use in cooking, if you like cooking. And I happen to love to cook. Three dried ancho chili. Whole.
Now, on the hot level, where do ancho chilies fall?
Fairly hot. What I do is I put them in whole, and that gives me a lot of control because then as the soup is simmering, I can take them, because they're not going to be hot, you know, in the first 3 minutes of cooking. So I just taste the soup as I go along, and then I take out the chilies when it's at the desired hotness.
Oh,
so it won't get any hotter.
That is a good way of doing it. That was a good way of doing it. Yeah. I've seen those charts which have, the chili chart that show mild, moderate, and severe on the severe end, which is kind of interesting. I always think about my wife. I brought her a bottle, essentially, of hot sauce, and it was so hot that she had it. She said, and she loves hot food, that she shook this hot sauce on, which was hotter than the devil hot sauce, shook it on the food that I gave her. I made a hot dish which was made out of rice and beans and stuff like that. It was a jambalaya. And she took one bite of the hot sauce and she said, "Oh my God." And her eyes opened up so much that her contacts popped out of her eyes.
Oh, come on.
Every popped out of her eyes. One we never found. Undoubtedly, we ate it as part of the meal. And the other one, and I had to take that with rubber gloves and throw that hot sauce away on that particular day.
Okay.
So I'm quite aware.
What after the chili?
One bay leaf.
A bay leaf?
That's right. One can of hominy drained.
A can of hominy drained.
That's right. And you know where to get the hominy, don't you, Tom?
In the grocery store?
That's right, in the grocery store. Under H.
Is this like hominy grits? Hominy?
I don't know. Do grits come? Yeah, hominy grits must come from hominy, don't you?
Grits are just ground up.
They're ground
hominy.
Up hominy
is the whole corn kernel.
Yeah,
in a can.
Okay,
hominy.
All right.
A teaspoon of garlic powder.
A little tea, garlic powder.
2 big tea of oregano.
2 tablespoons oregano.
1.5 teaspoon of cumin.
1.5 little tea cumin.
Now, question, where do you get your cumin?
I get my cumin in It's in the C-section of the spike.
Now, Zorba's going to save you some money
I'm
here.
I can see it coming. If you go to a Mexican grocery store...
If you're as cheap as Zorba...
I'm not cheap.
I'm sorry,
cheap
frugal.
Is a bad
if you're as
word.
Frugal as Zorba...
Frugal is okay, you know, paying attention to, is okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Cost comparison. If you go to an Indian grocery store, or an Asian grocery store, a little broader, or a Mexican grocery store, you can get cumin at a quarter of the price. Cumin in regular grocery stores is outrageously expensive. Cumin is cheap, especially in Indian grocery stores. It's a common spice, and Mexican grocery stores buy it that way. You will save a ton of money.
Of course, you spend a dollar and a half of gas going to and from
the neighborhood. It's in our neighborhood. Get on a bike and go there.
Okay.
I totally agree. Okay, great.
One lime squeezed.
A lime squeezed.
Yeah, now, what is this? 2 tablespoons of Recieto Goya cilantro cooking base? What is that?
I think the way it's pronounced is Recaito. It's R-E-C-A-I-T-O.
Uh-huh.
I found it in the little Goya section in the supermarket.
Goya is the name of a company. They make a really good olive oil
but it's a cilantro cooking base, and I picked it out because it had no fat, no calories.
So does it make a soup? Is it like a bouillon type base? Is that what
it is? No, it's like a goopy... consistency of salsa or so. I call it goopy cilantro stuff on the recipe
and it
card.
It tastes like cilantro, and what else does it taste? Is it some salt?
I'm looking at the ingredients right now. Got water, cilantro, dehydrated onions, green peppers,
sounds great.
Peppers.
Sounds like a fabulous addition. I think I'm going to go pick some up today. Tom's going to rush out and pick it up from the store, too.
I can't wait.
I won't hold my breath. One diced green tomato. Where do you get a green tomato?
Either at the farmer's market, maybe it's that they're widely available in the southern part of the
state. Yeah, they're widely available there, but let me tell you, in the north, we don't have green.
Do you have tomatillos?
Tomatillos we have. You could use a tomatillo. That would be just fine.
I would use a couple of tomatillos. Yeah, tomatillos
are fine. Yeah, tomatillos are fine. Okay, so here's what we do. We combine all the ingredients in a large pot, bring it to a boil, immediately reduce the heat. As you said, when you taste it, when it's hot enough, you remove the ancho chilies that are whole, cover and cook for about up to 45 minutes, check that spice, remove the chilies once the level of hotness is there. Serve it hot. What do you like to serve this with?
Tacos, she said.
Tacos.
Mm-hmm. With tacos, you could make it into a main dish if you just, I've done this before, add a can of beans.
Uh-huh, sure.
Black beans are really good.
Yeah.
And then serve it with bread. I've also thought about cut up tempeh. The cooking time is a little bit up in the air.
Sure.
It's basically cook it until you can't stand that the house smells so good and then you want to eat it.
I think that sounds like the perfect way to do it. This sounds absolutely delicious. It is magic. I agree with you. It is magic. Mexican pozole. Totally, and a la can opener makes it simple.
Shana, thanks a lot. Zorba's going to put this together. He's going to invite me over, and we're going to enjoy it.
We are going to have the soup. We shall.
Yeah. Thanks so much for submitting it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And for sending us this winning recipe, Shana gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low Fat, Guilt Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's easy. Just email your original low fat recipe to us at
zorba@wpr.org.
For today's recipe, send a stamped, self addressed, business sized envelope to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, zip 53706.
And you can also get our recipe at our website, zorbapastor.org. If you want to go there, you can download also our weekly podcast.
one 800 462 7413 is our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener now in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Zorba and Tom.
What's up?
Okay, I had a question. Each morning, I will make my family a fruit smoothie, which would include ground flaxseed and wheat germ, fruit, and also a vanilla whey protein.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, I give this fruit smoothie to, you know, my husband and my two children that are 1 and 8. And someone told me that you should not give young children whey protein, that it can do damage to their kidneys. So is there any health concerns in giving young children whey protein? I'm not putting, you know, just probably about 40, it comes out to about 40 grams of protein in a large blender size.
You know, it's interesting. That wouldn't make any sense to me. That would mean you can't give your children cottage cheese. I mean, you know, whey protein is derived from milk. So what could be wrong with milk for children? I mean, milk for children is good. And, you know, whey protein is derived from milk. So basically it's the same protein that's in milk. It's just a derivative. And, you know, sometimes people get, I don't know where ideas spring from.
The internet.
They sprung before the internet, too. You know, I think what happens is there's always like a continuous sort of a foment, sort of like the ether. They're just ideas that float around, and periodically they just kind of coalesce out of randomness. You know, whey protein is bad. One person says it, and by the end of the week, everyone believes that whey protein is bad. Not at all.
Okay.
I think smoothies are great. They're great to give. The issue about smoothies that you have to be careful is they can be very caloric dense. In other words, if you drink too much of it, you get fat. Mm-hmm. Because smoothies, although they have a veneer of being healthy in large amounts, can be unhealthy because, you know, in America we have too many calories. That's our biggest health hazard is we have too much food.
Yeah.
That's our biggest health hazard, but it's great. So what do you put in it? You put in some flaxseed?
Yeah, I usually give, because that was just a means to make sure my children would get some, So I give, you know, the ground flaxseed, the wheat germ,
okay,
and then some frozen fruit. But we put more milk in. We don't put orange juice in because, like you said, we don't want the extra calories.
Right, you don't need the calories. Orange juice is good in a juice glass. 4 ounces of good are good. 12 ounces are bad.
Right.
Now, it's not that 12 ounces are bad, you know, on an occasional basis, but every day, that's a lot of orange juice, you know. And if you're going to get 12 ounces basically are the equivalent of about 12 teaspoons of sugar. That's okay if you don't get your sugar somewhere else. You know, it's really this balance. How big is the glass you give your kids?
Just a little, like an 8 ounce glass.
Perfect. Sounds great. Do they like it?
They love it. My son, who's 8, you know, he looks forward to that every morning.
Fabulous.
And I use it as my almost like a meal replacement for my lunch. I find that it gets me through the day.
But it's a great idea. You've got fiber in there. Flax is great. You've got the oil from flax. You're getting your kids used to eating a thickened liquid that is not super sweet, which I think is good because some kids won't touch that. You know, they only want stuff that's sweetened with corn syrup, and I think corn syrup is awful stuff. You know, wasted calories that we simply don't need to have. So I keep that up. Keep up the good work, and it's
great.
A good way to get your kids to eat fruit, get them some fiber and vitamins and stuff. So.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call. I drink way over 12 ounces of orange juice every day.
Uh-huh. Well, but that's okay. But for kids, it's getting them used to that sweetness. That's what I'm it's the fact that you drink over 12 ounces of orange juice, but you're not overweight and you don't have a calorie problem.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of kids will say, "Well, I'm not going to drink Coke. I'm not going to drink soda. I'm going to have 20 ounces of orange juice." Well, 20 ounces of orange juice are about the same calories as 20 ounces of Coke. Yeah. You drink two of those a day, that's 40 ounces. That's 40 teaspoons of sugar. You don't need those calories.
I'm such a slob. I open the fridge. Yeah. I take out the container.
Let me guess.
I open it up and I drink it out of the container.
Right out of the container.
Absolutely. And I do it often during the day.
Oh, during the day, you just drink it dry. Is the container marked with a T, Tom?
No. My wife
does your wife drink it out of the same container?
Doesn't drink orange juice.
Oh, I see. So it's the Tom container.
And if she did, so what?
She doesn't drink orange.
I mean,
that's disgusting. Does it dribble down your shirt at the same time and get on the floor? That's what I want to know. Come on, I've got the image. Drinking out of the container, the milk. I bet you do the same thing. That's right.
Unshaven in my underwear.
Unshaven. That's exactly it. You got it. Tom
what a
at rest.
Classy guy.
Tom
he is
at
one
rest.
Classy
that's
guy.
Right. That's right.
Hey,
that's right.
Changing the subject, not long ago, Zorba, we talked with a caller who was worried about getting a steady amount of omega-3 fatty acids, but hated fish.
Right.
Well, Marge in Jacksonville, Florida, has a solution. She adds one grated walnut to every meal.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's spaghetti or veggies, she adds in the walnut.
Mm-hmm.
Marge likes the texture it adds and loves the health benefits.
That's actually a great idea. I kind of like it. I happen to like walnuts,
mm-hmm.
but think about that. Adding walnuts to different things as a health way to get omega-3 fatty acids and getting the taste of a walnut and stuff, like they say, spaghetti, or you could put it on a tuna salad sandwich. Now that I think about it, I love tuna and I love salmon. It's often what I have for lunch, and throwing just some walnuts on top of it, grated walnuts would be great. I think it's a great idea.
I'm searching my mind trying to think of something that I would think would be ruined with walnuts,
uh-huh.
and I can't think of
anything. Well, it's because you like walnuts, right?
I kind of do,
you like, you know, you could put it in the fruit smoothie that we just talked about.
It wouldn't be bad.
No, it wouldn't be bad at all in a fruit smoothie.
But a ham and cheese sandwich with walnuts is a
great idea. Yeah. Well, no, I think it's a great idea to take nuts and use them as a condiment on top of other foods, because now you're using a healthy condiment versus using sugar, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or ketchup or mustard that has more salt in it. It's a great idea. Love it.
Marge, thank you very much. Now, even if your listener tips are nuts, or about them anyway, keep them coming. Just send your tips in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Maybe you have a question for Zorba. Call 800-462-7413. And a listener now in Blanchard, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Dr. Zorba.
How can we help you?
My son is 15 now, but ever since he was young, he would get nosebleeds. And he would get 3 or 4 a year. But now the frequency and the duration has just really increased to maybe 3 or 4 a week.
Wow, that's a lot of nosebleeds.
Sometimes they're only, 2 or 3 minutes, sometimes maybe 15 minutes.
Terrible, awful, awful.
Yeah, it's embarrassing for a teenager.
Sure, sure, absolutely.
If it happens at school.
Yeah, he's gone to a doctor or not?
Well, no. Actually, my brother-in-law's a doctor, and I haven't really talked to him about it.
You've not talked to your brother? And you've got a good relationship with your brother-in-law?
Oh, yeah,
he's a nice guy.
Oh, he's wonderful.
Uh-huh, you go out to eat, you have dinner together and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you having trouble bringing this up? You know, it's such a personal thing, nosebleeds, you know? It's just one of those.
I don't know, because it happens in front of him all the time, you know?
So, and he hasn't, now what kind of, what is he, is he a family doc? Or?
A GP, yeah.
So in other words, he's been in front of your son when all of a sudden he's at the table and he's bleeding down into his plate.
She has a closer relationship with you, Zorba, than she does with her brother.
That's very sweet.
I just hate to bother him. I don't want to, every time I see him, say, hey, we have this medical problem.
That's right. That's right. Can you help this nosebleed? Well, does he have a regular doctor?
My brother-in-law.
Wait a second. Your brother-in-law is the one who doctors your son.
Yeah. But the nosebleeds haven't
Call up and make a secret appointment. Hey, what are you doing in the office? The first thing he'll say is, why didn't you call me up?
You're cheaper than her brother-in-law.
Oh, gosh. Gotcha. Frugal. Thrifty.
No. I mean cheaper for her to talk to you than to pay
I'm
her brother-in-law.
Oh, I see. I thought you're calling
me cheap.
His
rates are way up there.
He doesn't charge it.
A couple of recommendations. Your son may need to be cauterized. He needs to have his nose looked at. Sometimes a little cautery with silver nitrate, a little stick that contains something called silver nitrate, will stop the bleeding. The body sort of repairs itself, and you get a little layer over there, so it's not as friable, we call it, not as easy to bleed. Or he needs electrocautery. He needs to have his nose sort of numbed, and they use a little heat in there. That usually is the thing that takes care of it. It's usually a superficial blood vessel that's just bleeding. That's what I would do.
Okay.
Treatment can also be a vaporizer in the room, a little Vaseline in the nose sometimes will help. Does he get colds all the time? Does he have allergies?
No, he's very healthy, and we run a vaporizer, and he uses the saline solution.
He needs cautery then. He needs to have the nose cautery, and a couple times a week. Once a year is okay, but once you get to even once a month, it's too. Blood. Nobody likes to see blood.
No,
nobody. Right. Blood out of the nose, everyone turns away. They don't like it. I'm serious about that, and it's embarrassing to him. And
it is.
And they go, "Why is your nose bleeding?" And, I have no idea why nosebleeding is embarrassing, but it is. It's an embarrassing thing. So how are you going to tell your brother-in-law?
Oh, he won't mind.
No.
He's not the one to do it, right? And I hear...
No, he may do it. He may do it in the office. Ask him. Say, do you do it? I do it in my office all the time. I did it the other day. I had a guy who came in and he said, I'm bleeding twice a week. And I, put this in his nose and he hasn't come back. Of course, it was 2 days ago. So I'm gold for at least 2 days. But it works, really.
How long will that last?
Well, a lot of times it lasts for a long time. So sometimes you cauterize and it lasts for years. Some people come in every couple of years. Sometimes it has to be cauterized a couple of times because you don't get all the blood vessels. But the cautery is sort of a way of getting the body, irritating the body so it heals.
Great.
And he has a superficial vessel that is bleeding that needs to heal. So.
Okay. Thank you so much for your help.
Our pleasure. Good luck.
Thank you very much for the call. Now, you'll want to stick around. We have some more research coming up. We have our medical myth buster, and we may have an opportunity to talk with you at 1-800-462-7413. right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba, Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. You mentioned earlier, Zorba, that we have research on post-traumatic stress disorder, information that some scientists are taking a look at maybe trying to erase traumatic events from our memories.
Yeah, well, I don't know whether or not you can actually erase traumatic events from your memory. I mean, you do things naturally to forget traumas. I mean, we do it ourselves. You know, often when you have a traumatic event, such as you've witnessed a murder or had a rape or something terrible happen, or like I did, I was carjacked in Venezuela. You know, that you don't necessarily want to remember it the same way, but you know, this idea of whether or not you can erase it with a drug called propanolol is kind of interesting.
Yeah, there was a piece on 60 Minutes a while back on that, to making people feel better about the traumatic event propanolol.
Yeah, what happens is there's a drug called propanolol, and there are other drugs in this. Use it for stage fright. It's a blood pressure pill. It's called a beta blocker. It's used post-heart attack. It's used in a variety of ways. And what it does is it attenuates the pulse. So in other words, when you have a beta blocker on board, your pulse doesn't go up as high. So it might go up to 80 or 90, but it doesn't go up to 120, 130, 140. When you have a fast pulse, it makes you uncomfortable. And often the fast pulse can make you feel as if there's a flight or fright response. Something bad is going to happen. And a memory can trigger a fast pulse, and then the fast pulse makes you feel as if something bad is going to happen, and that can trigger the cascade called post-traumatic stress
disorder. On this piece that I saw, they would have people talk about the traumatic event while on propranolol, and by doing that over some period of time, the people then would not have the same kind of stress or
they might not have the same emotional response because when they think about the traumatic event, their pulse goes up, then they become very anxious and very upset.
Yeah.
And with propranolol, if they think about the traumatic event, the pulse doesn't go up, and they may not have the same anxiety over that. But it doesn't erase the memory. The memory is still there, but you don't have the anxiety associated with the memory.
Yeah, there are some people actually who say you shouldn't do this because it's really not good for people
to forget about those bad things that happened.
Yeah,
but those people may not have post-traumatic stress disorder. Post-traumatic stress disorder is awful. It's an awful situation. People don't like it. So the idea, well, you shouldn't treat it because then, I think it's a bogus argument. I think getting rid of the symptoms is important. You're not going to erase the memory, but you get rid of some of the anxiety. So people say, well, we shouldn't be using this. It's not a memory eraser. It just attenuates, separates out, if you will, that emotional response. I think it's important to take, and it's useful.
Yeah, so this is a good thing.
I think this is a good thing. I think knowing the beta blockers may help with PTSD is useful. If you think you have PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, talk to your doctor and discuss propranolol. I think it's a step forward.
Back to the phones we go at 1-800-462-7413. Ann Zorba, a listener with us now in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I have a quick question here for Zorba. It's been about 10 months ago that I went on a mission trip to Honduras, and while I was there, I shaved my legs using the water, which was probably a mistake, and since then, I've had this rash, which a dermatologist has diagnosed as folliculitis.
Okay.
It doesn't seem like anything that I've been doing. I've been on 3 different antibiotics, and it's just not going away.
Mm-hmm. So you've been on 3 different antibiotics for a long period of time, short period of time, or how long were you on those antibiotics?
The first one was just a few weeks. The second one was a month, and I'm currently on one about 1 month into a 3-month dose.
Right, because sometimes these things take a really, really long time. What kind of soap do you use when you wash?
Your cheap junk that, whatever's available.
So where is the folliculitis?
It's just on my lower legs.
So just, and you, so you buy cheap junky soap. You buy whatever's cheap and junky at the house.
Exactly.
Because
I'm in college, don't have a lot of money.
But one of the things you may want to do, even if you don't have a lot of money, which as you said, is you might want to get something like Dial soap. Costs a little bit more, but it's not overly expensive.
Dial?
Mm-hmm, Dial. I can still remember the, you know, slogan as a kid, Dial, use Dial, don't you wish everybody did?
But my mother... you usually recommend that other soap.
Dove. Yeah, but Dial is an antibacterial soap. And the other antibacterial soaps, Dial, Zest, Lifebuoy, Irish Spring, all of these soaps tend to be a little more drying, and you could try that out to see if that works better. That's one of the things I would try locally.
Okay.
I would look at that and see if that works, because it may be that if you dry that out a little more with an antibacterial type soap, that might help get rid of the folliculitis a little bit sooner. But getting back to the antibiotics, sometimes it takes 3 to 6 months. It takes a long time once you get
okay.
it. What are you, any ideas of what brought it on?
Well, what I think happened is there was some kind of, I mean, the water is not purified, you know, what I was using. So I'm thinking there was some kind of bacteria in the water. And when I used it to shave my legs, it got down into the pores, mm-hmm. the hair follicles.
You shaved, how often did you shave your legs?
I just did it once while I was there.
Oh, so just one time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, because, you know, shaving does disturb the hair follicles itself, and mm-hmm. sometimes that will produce it. I try an antibacterial soap, and I would do that, and I would hang in there. Antibiotics do work, but sometimes they take a full 6 to 8 weeks before they kick in. Sometimes it's three to four months, but hang in there. It should work over time.
Okay.
Good
Great.
Luck.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for the call. Well, Zorba, we actually have a link from that call to our medical myth buster this time.
Cool.
Today's myth might make our lady listeners perk up a bit. It has to do with that old myth that shaving hair will make it grow back faster. So, is this true, Zorba? Or can our female fans relax on their leg shaving?
How about male fans, Tom? I remember my mother saying, don't shave this young, you know, as soon as you shave.
I never noticed when I shave my legs whether the hair grows back faster or
not. Not just the legs. You know, I'm talking about on the face for guys, you know, no matter where. The answer is, it is a myth that shaving your hair will actually make your hair grow back quicker. And it's a myth that was clearly been around since the 20s or 30s. And there were studies done years and years and years ago, back in the early 40s and the 50s, that mm-hmm. showed that basically it was a myth. Now, part of the reason the myth starts is that often men and girls start mm-hmm. shaving at a young age. Their hair is not fully colored. You know, you take boys who are sort of pubescent and they're starting to shave, and you look at their hair, it's mostly a thin peach fuzz type of hair. And what happens is a year or two later, when the testosterone is going through the skin mm-hmm. For both men and women, the hair becomes rougher and darker at the roots. And that's the reason, and it grows quicker. It's that over time, your hair starts to grow quicker because the hormones are doing it to you.
But now, if you let your hair, say your hair on your head, if either mm-hmm. one of us had any, keep on growing, mm-hmm. doesn't it come to a point where it stops growing?
Well, it comes to a point in the hair follicle, if it's long enough and it's pulling on it, that the hair stops growing for most of us, not for all of us. So that part is true. If you let the hair on your head grow long, eventually it
doesn't
stop
keep
growing
forever.
No, it doesn't. No, otherwise some people would have it down
to
their ankles.
That would lead one to believe that if you cut often.
Yeah, but it's not true. It's not true. If you shave, it is not true that your hair grows quicker no matter what. Studies have been done. Put it to rest. Myth. Throw it away. That's it. Pop. Next question.
I'm going to quit shaving my legs. Do you have a medical myth? We'll try to bust it or prove it right. Just send it along in an email with the subject titled Myth Busters. Make sure to send that email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our number again, 800-462-7413. A listener now, Zorba, in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, what's up?
Well, a few years back, I started getting some pain in my arms. Had it checked by my doctor, and last winter it was diagnosed as what they call spondylitis, which they said was a degeneration of the discs in my neck and a kind of arthritic condition there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's apparently causing compression on the nerves, causing shooting pains down my arms. My doctor started me off on some pretty hard painkillers, and then I went to see a specialist.
What kind of hard painkillers?
Well, codeine-related drugs, things
okay.
like that.
Okay, so started you on a narcotic pain.
Yeah, plan. Right.
Okay.
And the specialist who was a surgeon that I went to, he looked over x-rays and an MRI and made the diagnosis of spondylitis. Mm-hmm. And he changed me from the hard drugs to high doses of ibuprofen and a muscle relaxant, which worked better in this circumstance.
Okay.
He was he prescribed 600 milligrams of ibuprofen up to three times a day.
Okay.
And I've been able to get by on two times a day on that. But since then, I have heard that ibuprofen can lead to liver damage.
Uh-huh. Well, if you are you 85?
No, I'm not.
Well, that's one risk factor, age.
Okay.
Another risk factors are, you know, kidney disease, liver disease. But for the most part, ibuprofen is a pretty safe drug. The biggest issue with all anti-inflammatory drugs, the two big issues, nothing to do with liver. Number one, GI bleeds. In other words, we know anti-inflammatory drugs cause ulcers that bleed.
Okay.
So that's actually the number one risk factor. And the number two risk factor is this possible perceived risk factor for heart attacks, that there is a small but noticeable increased risk of people who take anti-inflammatories. And when I say small, it came out from the Vioxx. Vioxx was clearly an outlier, but the other ones all seem to have some small risk to it. I think it's a small risk. I think it's there, but it's not a big risk. But the liver and kidney disease can happen, but frankly, we have people on these drugs. We don't necessarily even do blood tests on a regular basis because it's not a common event. I don't see it. You see kidney dysfunction, you see other things, but how old are you? How old are you?
57.
I think you're fine to take it. You know, heart disease, you have heart disease, diabetes, any other medical problems?
None that I know of, no. Mm-hmm.
You listen to public radio all the time?
Quite a bit, yeah.
That's what counts. If you listen to public radio, you will remain healthy and you can take all the ibuprofen you want. It's far better than narcotics.
Thanks for the call. And on that note, Zorba, thank you.
Stay well, Tom.
For a copy of this week's recipe and all things Zorba, visit us on the web.
At zorbapastor.org.
And don't forget, you can bug our producer anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Adam Friedrich and Brad Kohlberg make up our peanut gallery, and Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting you to be back with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.